Welcome to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255.
Always nice to spend Thanksgiving with a couple of turkeys. Frank Napala.
You've been working on that one for a while, haven't you, Steve?
It just came into my mind.
Right.
Morning, Frank. Morning, Paul.
Buongiorno.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, I know you're chomping at the bit already, Paul. You got numbers. I bet you got numbers galore.
I do. I have numbers galore.
Hey, before we get to your numbers, I like Frank's numbers. Frank is always excited about how many jobs are added to the economy.
Just stop it.
So 157,000 new jobs in Canada. All right. So they say that brings us back to pre-pandemic levels. The States, 194,000. How is that possible?
Well, I don't get it. I mean, I think I remember from February of 2020 before the pandemic started, I don't remember seeing help wanted sign on every single door. I don't remember seeing any of that. And yet somehow, miraculously, we're back at the amount of jobs that we had pre-pandemic. It's just, to me, it's outrageous. It doesn't make any sense unless people that are collecting the CERB or the government subsidies is considered a job. If that's a job, then it makes more sense to me. But other than that, it's either our employment has gone through the roof and everybody's short employees, or the numbers don't seem right. And I don't know, my hand's on the ladder. I believe in the ladder.
If you can work and you're not working, you're collecting CERB, shame on you.
Yep.
Honestly, shame on you. It's actually frustrating right now going to restaurants and seeing how short-staffed they are. They're just dying for help. And, you know, I personally know a couple people who are on CERB and they're fully capable of working, and it's just not right. I think people need to get back to work. But I'm flattered by the flabbergasted, sorry, about those numbers as well, because it's every single street you drive down with a restaurant or a shop or something like that is help wanted, help needed. And I'm surprised that we added that many jobs.
It's crazy, but I don't understand when you compare it to the States, we're almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
It makes no sense because they're what, 10 times our population?
Yeah, exactly.
Somehow we've created the same number of jobs as they have.
Again,
I don't know where the numbers come from, who counts them, who does it, but there's a little suspicion in those numbers.
I know it's your favorite topic, next to gas prices.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for starting off the show with that. Now you're going to... Now you got to get into the gas too at $1.45 a liter this morning. How does that make any sense? We're at $70 a barrel. How does that make any sense?
Why get them going, Steve? Come
it's,
on.
It's a long weekend. That's why it's $1.45. It's the long weekend.
I just love winding this up and sitting back and watching the show. All right, Paul, let's get to your numbers, the ones we've been waiting for. The amount of money people are paying for homes is still substantial.
It is, but we're starting to see a total flattening out. We've seen it over probably the last 3 or 4 months now. You know, the number of sales in September was actually down 30.6%, which is not surprising. I thought it was going to be somewhere in that range. The average sale price over September of last year is up 14%, with residential up 13% and condo up 13.8%. But when we look at year to date, the number of sales is up 14.8%. Keep in mind, that used to be in the high 20s, right? So it's actually starting to come down. So we're up 14.8%. The average sale price is up 23.5% over September of last year. But we look at the track record of what it's done over the last few months. We really peaked at the end of, we talked about in the first 3 months of the year, it went up 117,000. And then since then, it's just really tailed off. Our peak was in June, where we were at 658,000. We're now at 648,000. So since the end of June, we've actually gone down $10,000. So saying that, I don't want to hear sellers complaining or getting worried or thinking that the market's bottoming out, because keep in mind, like I mentioned, the first 3 months of the year, we're up 117,000. So you've already seen all that appreciation. We're just starting to normalize a little bit now. So it's just more of a normal market. Yes, have we gone downhill over the last few months? Yes, we have, but not drastically, not by a lot. We're seeing more opportunity out there. We're seeing more choices. Homes are not necessarily going to multiple offers right now. Some are, some aren't. But, you know, whereas before we saw all multiple offers, now we're seeing, you know, 50-50 multiple offer. There's more conditional sales. There's more, you know, sales that come in with their financing, their home inspection. So we're just starting to normalize, which is, it's more of a healthy market for everyone. I know sellers still want to hit that home run. It's just a more normal market that we're going through.
Well, right, you say downhill a little bit. We never thought we'd be up this hill this high.
I mean, well, no. Keep in mind, we finished the end of the year. So, you know, what are we, 9 months ago? We finished the end of the year at $529,000 and change is our average sale price. And right now we're at $648,000. Yes, we were at $658,000, but now we're at $648,000 compared to $529,000 9 months ago. So, you know, I know there's some sellers right now who are a little bit grumpy right now, but they should not be grumpy because, you know, if we would have gone up to 3-5% like we usually go up every year, we haven't. We've drastically gone up. You know, our average sale price is up 23.5%, which is humongous. So
yeah, I'd take that return on my money any day.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's don't panic. The market's not bottoming out. We're just starting to see a little bit of more of a normal market.
So average residential is now over 700,000, Paul?
Average residential is 720,000 and change. So it's actually up 25% over last year. So
720 or 702?
Well, it was 702 for the month of September.
Right.
But year to date, it's at 720.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Year to date, it's at 720 and the average condo is at 421 and change. So that's gone up a lot too. So that went up 16.8%. So that's a year to date number.
If I had asked you 2 years ago, if the average sale price would ever get to 700,000 or how long it would take, what would your answer have been?
I would never, well, not never, but I would have thought we would probably be looking at 2024, 5, 6, somewhere in that range to get up that high. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, to get up this quick. And that's why I've probably had 4, 5, 6 conversations this week with sellers who are, you know, grumpy. They think the market's bottoming out. And I said, guys, keep in mind, 9 months ago, we probably would have listed your house for $100,000 less.
Yeah.
So don't panic. You're still making up all that ground. Yeah, maybe you're not going to hit the home run like you did in the first, you know, 3, 4, 5 months of the year, but you're still way ahead of where you would have been, you know, 9 months ago when our average sale price was $529,000.
How much more difficult does this make it for mortgages for people now, Frank? You got to get a bigger mortgage. And of course, you got the stress test on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, things have lined up against you if you're a first-time home buyer or even someone who's looking to buy maybe even a second home. You know, from the beginning of the year to now, the prices have gone up tremendously. The stress test has gone from 4.79 to 5.25. The interest rates have remained relatively stable. So that's the good news in all of this, but much tougher. I mean, again, the rule of thumb, if you're carrying very little or no debt, is 5 times your annual gross income. I mean, that's what you qualify for a mortgage, and then you add the down payment on top of that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, not a lot of people have no debt. I mean, they've got some other debt, and therefore that gets in the way of impacting whether you qualify for a mortgage or not. So, you know, you got to get a pre-approval in place. If you're looking to buy a house, I think it's imperative now to at least have a conversation with your mortgage broker, your bank, whoever you have your mortgage with, and at least get some peace of mind and confidence knowing that, you know, as you get serious and start looking at homes, that you've got your financing in place.
No word on any of these proposed changes coming in?
None yet. Unfortunately, again, the job report did have a little negativity to it, which is, of course, bond markets went up again yesterday. So, you know, it was nice of the banks not to raise interest rates last night. The banks are known for doing it to us on long weekends. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, the bond market has gone up a little bit over the last couple of days and specifically yesterday. And time will tell whether they stabilize and therefore rates stay the way they are, or if they continue to go up, then expect bank rates to maybe hike fixed mortgage rates again shortly.
What do you think they would go up by?
Another 10 basis points, maybe 5 or 10 basis points. So nothing drastic, but still every little bit starts add up. I mean, we had one a couple of weeks ago and another one coming up potentially. And all of a sudden, you know, the little 5 or 10 basis points becomes a quarter, 0.5%, just like that.
Yeah, but surely the banks won't pass along the entire amount.
No. I mean, they're making so much money that they feel for the consumers today. And just, you know, they want to give back. It's Thanksgiving after all, Thanksgiving Day weekend. You know, they want to give back. No, you know what? The banks are, listen, I mean, the fact that they're profitable is a good thing for us in Canada. It's to the level of their profit that really makes everybody shake their heads. And they have not had any impact whatsoever, negative impact during COVID, like a lot of middle-class Canadians, lower-class Canadians. Again, I mean, you know, if you read all the articles, the rich have gotten richer and the middle class have struggled more because everything is more expensive. And then the, you know, the ones that are just barely making ends meet are even in more trouble now. So, you know, that's what the government is supposed to be for, to make sure that there's a fair playing field for everyone. But hard to tell that that's happening based on everything we see.
Yeah, but with so many jobs, Frank, there's no problems ahead.
You think, right? One would think with all these jobs that are out there and the fact that there's so many help wanted, that there's so much more employment these days. Yet, you know, I think we don't see a lot of people that are really, really, really in trouble. And I think a lot of people have benefited from the house values going up because they were able to refinance their home, pay off some of the higher interest rate debt. So I think they benefited from it. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, going to the grocery store today, going to the gas station, everything you do is so much more expensive than it was a short 12 months and 18 months ago, that it's really impacted a lot of, like I said, the lower and the middle class Canadians tremendously.
Yeah, it could be a bit of a delay for first-time homebuyers because of that, right?
For sure, for sure. Or else they got to start with a condo and hope that they can get a condo with very low condo fees, because that's what it's going to take to get into the market.
521 Talk, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth. Guys, what do you think is the average age now for a first-time home buyer? I don't have the number, but what would you guess?
27. I have the number. Well, that's an American number, but it's fairly similar to Canada, I believe. But the average age of a first-time home buyer in the United States is 27 years old.
That's still not too bad.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet it's higher in Canada, though. My money is on it probably being a little bit higher in Canada.
Do you read the stat, what they're doing in Spain now? Because the average person stays home with their parents until 30. So now the government is going to offer them $300 to go out and rent a place of their own.
Wow.
$300. What are they going to rent for $300?
Well, I guess, to help them out, I guess, to get started. But I've never heard of Italy.
I'm betting that number's higher in Italy.
You think so?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know what I mean? In Italy, every time I've been, you see families living together. I mean, the parents are with the kids and the kids' kids. So they just all get together, and for them, I mean, they'd rather spend their money on life experiences as opposed to, having a big house for three people and then, you know, your parents to another big house for two people. So what they do is they just live together and they just get used to it. And it's acceptable there.
Well, why would you need a separate place when you have four kitchens?
Well, I was going to say, hence the two kitchens, right? You know what, Frank? Frank just moved out of his parents' house just last year, so that's amazing. Good for you, Frank.
My parents have an end-unit townhouse bungalow with two beautiful kitchens in it, so good for them.
I wish I had that.
Two kitchens.
So there's two of them living in the house. They each have their own kitchen.
Two of them, 1,600 square feet, maybe 1,600, probably not even 1,600 square feet, probably 1,400, but 500 of it is kitchen for sure, so...
This all comes back to parents having to help their kids get into their first house these days, right, Frank?
It really does. I mean, the bank of mom and dad is imperative in helping young Canadians today, whether they're helping them with the down payment, whether they're helping them with having to co-sign or guarantor the mortgage. I mean, it's prevalent. We're seeing it more and more than we ever have before. I don't know if you're seeing it as well, Paul, but for us, we're seeing it more and more. And again, I mean, they can afford it. I mean, the bad part about it is that if you really do the math on how much they're bringing in and how much their mortgage is going to be, along with their property taxes and the insurance and their expenses, they can actually afford it. The problem is the stress test. The stress test makes it unaffordable, because here they are getting mortgages in the 2% range, but having to qualify at 5.25% range. So I'm not saying the stress test is wrong. I still believe the stress test is too high. I don't see mortgage rates getting to 5.25% anytime in the next 5 years. And I'd like to see, and I know they're talking about making some changes. We'll see. I imagine in the next month or 60 days, we'll see some kind of a budget come out. It'd be nice to see if they can
say, listen, if you take a 5-year mortgage or a 7 or 10 year, here's what you qualify at. But if you take anything less than that or a variable, that's the 5.25. Then qualify them with 5.25. But if you're taking a 5-year mortgage, and realistically, most economists will tell you that realistically, 5 years from now, top level 5-year fixed mortgage, likely 4%. So if that's the top level of what the mortgage rates will be, why not make that the qualifying test?
Do you think it'll be that high, Frank? 4%?
Well, I'm saying that's the top end. I mean, I don't think they're going to get that high, but that would be the top end. So if that's going to be the top end, why are we having them qualify 5.25? And I understand why they did what they did back in the spring, because this real estate market was booming, but it didn't slow it down as much as some people think. Well, it was coincidence or not. It was coincidence, because the market was likely to slow down anyway as everything opened up. And I still think that there's a, you know, maybe there's a little blip in there coming soon. I mean, I think the lockdowns are over. At least I feel like the lockdowns are over after the announcement yesterday where they're opening up sporting venues and everything 100% now, theaters 100%. So I'd like to think the lockdowns are over with now. But I mean, I still see a potential spike in real estate coming up in the next 6 months, because I just think that people are so enamored with having a proper home that they want that it's still possible it could happen.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that too. I think we'll see a bit of a spike too, whether it's going to be a fall spike or whether it's going to be a spring spike. I do think we're going to have some sort of spike coming up, and how long it's going to last, I don't know. I would have thought that, and I did say this early when our market started to go crazy. I did say, I believe this is going to happen and last for most of 2021. I didn't know it would stop so quick, but I also didn't think our average sale price was going to go up $117,000 in 3 months, which is astronomical. So it was bound to level off. I mean, when townhomes in suburbia were selling in the sevens, I couldn't fathom them selling in the eights and the nines. Like, that would just be crazy. We'd be in Toronto, Vancouver territory if that happened. And so it was bound to happen. But I do predict, like Frank said, another smaller real estate spike, mm-hmm. probably in the next 6 months. Like Frank just said, I agree with that.
Where are we at for listings right now, Paul?
We're low. We're at 1,846 homes on the market right now in 601 to 9404 for all you realtors liking to listen. The biggest thing is the rentals. There's so many rentals on the market right now. There's 762 rentals on the market. And when you look at areas like Barrhaven and Kanata, there's 73 homes for sale in Kanata and 71 rentals. There's 85 homes for sale in Barrhaven and 82. So it's like 82 rentals. So it's like there's as many rentals as there are homes for sale in those two areas. We're seeing, like I said last week, the east end of Ottawa. There's usually about three times the amount of homes for sale as there are for rentals in the east end. So there's more of a sort of a glut on the market in the east end compared to the west end. The west end is still a little bit hotter. The south and the west are still a little bit hotter than the east right now. There's just more opportunity in the east. And I've been telling buyers, I had one-on-one meetings with my team over the last couple of weeks. And I said to them, I said, listen, consumers still believe we are in an absolute crazy seller's market right now. They don't, because really the news is coming out slowly that the market has started to shift, but not as quick as we thought. So
yeah, it doesn't make the headlines that it did, right? I mean, obviously you're going to get huge headlines when it goes up that much.
Exactly. You are. And we're not seeing that right now. And anytime I talk to a consumer, they're like, oh, you're in real estate, man. You guys are loving this. This is a crazy market. And I'm like, yeah, it was 4 months ago, but it's not the same market right now. We're in a totally different market. So anyone who's listening, who's taken themselves out of the game because they were sick of the bidding wars, they were sick of the multiple offers and how crazy it was and the chase of the property. Get back in the game, because that's not happening right now. There's more up. Yes, there's not a lot of listings on the market, but at the same time, there's not a lot of people looking right now. There's so many people that have taken themselves out of the game. Get back in the game. The market has shifted. If you're a buyer, get back in the game. I'm telling you, we look at by the week, our new listings were flat this week. Our average sale price, our sold properties were actually dropped this week. And our average sale price was pretty flat this week as well. I mean, the condo market went up, but the residential market actually went down for the average sale price. So good time to get in the market. If you're a buyer, it's a great time.
How is it the Toronto market is still smoking and then we're taking a bit of a pause?
It's hard to be honest with you. It's hard to know. I mean, we're honestly not seeing as many Toronto buyers come here right now. I mean, we saw in the first, you know, 3, 4, 5 months of the year, we saw tons of Toronto buyers coming here. I haven't seen very many recently. So I don't know, maybe they're going back to work and they realize that, you know, that they can't work from home. So they're not moving to Ottawa. I don't know, but the Toronto market it's always very different than our market though, Steve. Like, you know, when our market's going up, sometimes their market's going down and vice versa. So it's a total different animal to Toronto and to Vancouver.
You think when the weather turns a little more nasty here, people will be hunkered down and have nothing to do and decide, well, let's get back into the market?
Well, you know what, when the weather turns and you have your house on the market, I had a gentleman the other day who said, yeah, you know, I want to wait till spring. And I said, why are you waiting till spring? Get your house on the market now. And he says, well, in winter, no one's looking. I said, well, hold on. The people that are looking are serious buyers. No one's going house shopping in the middle of winter if you're not a serious buyer. So the people are looking are serious. There's not as much on the market, so you don't have as much competition. So I've always said there's no bad market. I mean, you either list when there's less competition, but less people looking, or more competition and more people looking, like a spring market. So you can't lose either way. You know, all markets are good. It's just, you know, how many people are looking and what your competition is.
Well, as I recall, it wasn't so bad in January and February.
March were absolutely crazy.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Paul Rushforth and Frank Napolitano. You get changed, Frank?
I think he was. Did he go for it? I think he was looking for his wallet. He hasn't seen it in weeks.
Weeks? I thought it was a year and a half.
You know, it's been about a year and a half since he saw his wallet to buy me breakfast. That's for sure.
Hey, I'm reading some of these stats on homes in the outskirts. Unbelievable the percentage that they've increased over the past year and a half. It's crazy.
Yeah, read some of them out. Read some of them out, Steve.
Well, Pakenham up 55% year over year. Almont 44%. Embrun 41%. That's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a product of COVID, to be honest with you, because the core was always the hotter area, and the outer core was always really slow. I mean, you could take weeks and months to sell your house in the outer core. However, that changed when COVID happened. I mean, we saw in 2020, we saw, you know, areas like Armpryor lead the way. We saw, you know, anything on the outer skirts of the city was just flying, you know, with people working from home. And I think that we're still seeing that. I think as we sort of slowly come out of this COVID, I mean, we'll never be out of it, but as we slowly come out of it, you might see that change a little bit. We might see people who are going back to work and they don't want the commute anymore. So maybe they'll buy in the core, you know, closer into suburbia. But right now, over the last year and a half, there's a lot of people still working from home. And, you know, I've mentioned this many times before. I mean, people that were living and working in Kanata, now they live in Armpryor because they don't have to commute to work anymore. And it's a nice, quaint community. You know, there's lots of places in the East End as well. So I just think those areas have started to skyrocket because they are great areas. They have a lot of amenities, and you can work from home. You don't need to commute. So that's why we saw those areas start to skyrocket. And they will continue, especially with a lot of people not going back to work permanently.
Even with gas prices going up now?
Yeah.
Even with gas prices going up?
Well, if you don't have to commute to work and you're living in a small community in the outskirts that has all the shopping amenities, you know, has your restaurants, has your Home Depots, your LCBOs, all that kind of stuff. Like, as long as you, and I always say, you know, you've made it as a community when you get a Starbucks. That's pretty much it. When you get a Starbucks, you know you've made it as a community. Or you get a Home Depot, you know you've made it as a community.
And you know you've made it as a person when they get your name right.
Exactly.
Hey, traffic has come back though. Hey boy, like I've noticed the last month or so, boy, the Queensway is a mess. But even other roads, Carling Avenue, Baseline, I find a lot of the roads, and I don't know what it's like in the East End, Paul, but I don't know if Innes and all those roads are back to heavy traffic during certain times of the day. And
yeah, you know what we need? We need LRT. If only we had an LRT.
That's the reason. Yeah. That's probably the reason, actually, for some of it.
Yeah. I have noticed that too, Frank. I mean, I don't do a ton of commuting back and forth, but you know, when I go to my West End office or I'm going downtown for something, I have noticed the traffic's a little thicker now. And I think there was a lot of people who were taking a lot of time off in the summer too. And there's a lot of employers that once the summer ended said, okay, guys, it's now back to work. Kids are going back to school. Let's get back to work. And so there are more cars on the road. The traffic is heavier for sure.
So retail's opened up too. That's part of it, right? So once retail opened up, now all of a sudden people are going to stores, and that's what's brought some of it on too.
Yeah.
Speaking of stores, not to sideline our real estate talk, but I don't understand how you can have 20,000 people in an auditorium and you still can't have a full restaurant. Can you explain that to me?
It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. You know, like, you know, the Senators home games this Thursday, home opener, sorry, is this Thursday, and they're allowed to have 18,300 or 400 or whatever fans in the stands.
Yeah.
But they weren't masked the whole time. So I think that's what they're trying to tell you, is that if you go to one of those places, you got to keep your mask on the entire time. At a restaurant, you're taking it off. So,
well, you don't if you're drinking beer. If you're drinking beer, you don't have to.
You're right. You're right. That's the trick when you go to these places. As long as you have a drink in your hand or food in your hand, which, you know, a guy like me and Paul always have either a drink or food in our hand, we're fine. We don't have to wear masks.
you know what's funny is my coaching program is a mostly an American coaching program. It's, you know, sprinkled with some Canadians in it. We had a conference this week in Dallas, Texas, and I decided obviously not to go. I did it virtually 3 days on Zoom, but there was 4,000 people in the room, no masks, hugging, high fiving, kissing. Like, it was. I think the Americans, and I mean, I'm not, it's not here to take a stance on which side's right or wrong, but I think the Americans have just decided that we just have to live with this now.
Well, considering they're only 56% vaccinated and we're 80%, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, and they thought it was weird that I wasn't there, and I was just like, well, I don't really care to go to Dallas, Texas right now when the COVID cases are through the roof, and I have another conference next week in Nashville that I've decided to do virtually as well, but it's... I mean, once again, Nashville's going through some struggles as well. And I couldn't see myself in a room full of people. And it just wasn't something I wanted to do. So doing it virtually, it was tough. 3 days sitting in front of my computer, but it was still awesome.
All right, to the phones we go, and we say hello to Cindy. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, good morning. I have a question for Frank. I have a rental property that we took a five-year fix back when the rates were going up. And it has 15 months left in it. And I'm thinking, like, if the tenants move out early, that we would just sell it. And I thought to reduce the penalty to put extra money on the loan so that the fees are less. Am I correct in thinking that?
Well, again, if your plan is to sell it, then absolutely. You want to try and reduce the amount of penalty that you pay. Now, with 15 months, you're in the lower part of your mortgage, so... you know, penalty should be semi-reasonable, as opposed to anytime you're between 18 and 42 months, I say, is when it's the most expensive. You get to that, you know, that sweet spot where you're at. And once you get below a year, the penalty becomes much more reasonable and palatable. But still, if your plan is to sell the property and you've got some extra money sitting around, take advantage of the prepayment privilege. And I'll tell you right now, in your specific scenario, if you've got 15 months left, depending on which bank is your mortgage with,
Scotia.
With Scotia. So Scotia allows for 15% prepayment. So of your original mortgage amount per year.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do is I would, if you know the exact amount, if not, you go into the branch and they'll tell you exactly how much you're allowed to prepay. I would do one of those payments before you hit the 1 year mark. And then a week later, you can do another prepayment privilege for that 15% for that year as well. So that you really knock down your balance and knock down the amount of penalty you pay based on the fact that you're going to pay it off anyway. As long as you're selling it. If you're not going to sell it, then there's tax, you know, the tax benefits to having a rental property and having a mortgage on a rental property that, you know, to offset the write-offs based on the rent. So you may not want to do it if you're not selling, but if you know you're selling for sure, then I would say try to prepay it before you hit the 1 year anniversary. Take advantage of this year's prepayment privilege and then do it again once you get below 1 year so that you can knock down your penalty as much as possible.
Cindy, why are you thinking of selling your rental property?
The other question was for you, actually, because last year we couldn't increase the rent. It was 0%, and this year is 1.2. I mean, at some point it gets expensive, and it's a fairly big house. So, you know, you start changing the roof and stuff. I don't think we'll be able to make up with these low increases that we are allowed. So,
okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate seeing people sell rental properties. I mean, the more doors you can accumulate, but then again, if you feel like you got some big expenses coming your way in the next little bit, you just would rather not do them. Maybe selling is the option, especially because of what the prices have done over the last, you know, year and a half. So
Frank, is it worth borrowing the money to prepay for that in this scenario? If you don't
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. If you have a personal line of credit or, you know, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you know you're sold for sure, you're selling for sure, why not? I mean, it's going to cost you less to borrow it from a personal line of credit for a month or two than it would the penalty, and you'll make that back easily. So you got to do the math on it, and I'm more than happy to help you with that. If you, you know, if you ever need help doing the math on it, I'm more than happy to help out by you reaching out to me, and I'll crunch some numbers for you. But again, I mean, it's disappointing to hear that you're selling it, because it doesn't cash flow properly, because it's what's happened with the market. And it's one of the unfortunate things is that, you know, a lot of the laws are favor the tenants as opposed to landlord. And the increase of 1.2% doesn't meet the inflation. The inflation these days is at 4%, yet the rents are only able to go up at 1.2%. It's totally unfair. You know, unless your tenants move out, then you're able to get fair market value. But if your tenants don't move out, then sometimes your only choice is to sell it.
Well, here's the deal, though, Cindy. If you sell that place and you buy a place that was built after 2018, you can put up your rent as much as you want. That's true. Any new building after 2018 is not covered by rent control. Did you guys know that?
No, I thought it was they changed it. It was 2008 before, right?
Yeah, it's 2018. So any new building after 2018, if you have a new tenant in, you can rent their, you can raise their rent as much as you want.
On new tenant, yes.
Because older houses have more repairs.
yeah, exactly. So there you go. And then Paul will get you a new place.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you.
Did you guys know that after 2018? I didn't know that until last week. It's 1.2.
Where'd you get that, Steve? Where'd you get that? It seems
that's Ontario government. At Ontario government, as of in 2018, if a building is built for rentals after 2018, there is no rent control. They can put it up 1.5, 1.9, as much as they want. Yeah, you see,
Paul, I'll leave that to you. Look at you bringing it.
I'm not just another pretty face here, boys.
Look at you bringing it.
521 Talk, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Hey, Frank, with so many kids needing help, so many parents having equity in their house, worth taking some of the equity, giving it to your kids? Are you starting to see that?
I think in some cases it's worth it to take out enough so that maybe the kids don't even pay the default insurance on it. So, if you could save, I mean, default insurance, if you're buying a house with 5% down, it's 4%. So it's almost like not putting a down payment down. By the time you pay the PST on the default insurance, it's almost like no money down, but you actually have to put that 5% down. So in some cases, what we're seeing is we're seeing parents take out a home equity line of credit on their house and technically, you know, give their kids the money, but they're lending it to them. And then the kids are paying off that home equity line of credit, and they're avoiding that default insurance. So that's one strategy that we've seen here and there. In other cases, we've got the parents going on as guarantors because, again, they're just short on the income, even though they can do it on their own. And the parents feel confident that they really won't get involved, even though they're signing on as guarantors. So we're seeing that happen quite a bit. And then in some cases, the parents just have to go on as co-signers because of the scenario that that the kids are in. So
why does it cost so much? Why does it cost so much for default insurance, considering the amount of defaults there actually are?
It's a great question. Certainly, I mean, CMHC, they own the market for the longest time. And of course, they're a crown corporation. They wanted to lose a little bit of market share. And unfortunately for them, they've lost too much market share now where, CMHC is second now behind Sagen, and then Canada Guarantee is not far behind in third place. So, CMHC was an extremely profitable Crown Corp. And for some reason, the government thought that maybe there was too much risk. CMHC, I think, came out to say that maybe there was too much risk. And obviously, you know, we can't beat it to death anymore. I mean, the predictions that CMHC have made over the last couple of years are just off, just a little bit off. But at the end of the day, Default insurance is too expensive. One of the promises that were made by the Liberal Party, if they got in, was to cut the default insurance by 25%. We'll see if that materializes once the budget comes out.
Hey, Paul, we're talking about listings being so low last month, below the five-year average, eh? Five-year average for this time of year, 2906, 2252 last month. So are the listings going to come back in the next month or two?
It's hard to tell, Steve. I mean, I can usually predict every market, every season, what's going to happen. It's really hard with what's going on in our market right now to predict what's going on.
Do you think these things opening up, like hockey games and concerts and getting back to a much more normal life, will help the market?
I definitely think it'll help the market, but keep in mind, this is our fourth wave, right? Like, we've lived through this. We know what we're doing. I don't think, you know, opening things up as much as they have will impact that much. I'd like to think it would, but I'm not sure if it is going to impact that much. There's definitely the feel of a lot. Well, the numbers are there, but you can definitely feel the fact that they've almost put that pin in the balloon when it comes to the market right now.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just normal, and you know, it wasn't normal at the start of the year, and now we're just in a normal market, but it just feels much slower. But you know, even on the weekends when my client care team's in there, and they're, you know, we usually get 50, 60, 70 leads on a weekend. Now we're getting, you know, half, if not even less than half people calling in. It's just a little bit of a slow time. And I'd love to say it's because the kids went back to school and because of the fourth wave and because of the election, but you know, that was a while ago. That was a month ago, you know? So it's hopefully starting to ramp up now. And I hope we start to see a little bit of a spike before the end of the year, like we talked about earlier in the show.
Hey, Paul, have open houses taken a back seat?
They have. I'm starting to see more of them now. I'm starting to see more agents do open houses, which is great. I think on our team, we've had maybe two or three open houses. So they've been a little bit light. And you know what? There's still lots of people who are still very COVID scared, rightfully so. And they're just waiting. They're taking that back seat to see what's going on. I'd like to see the open houses come back, because as we've shown many, many, many months, we know how to do this now. Like, we know how to live properly through COVID, and we know how to do things safe. We know how to show homes properly, open houses. Like, there's definitely a way to do it. Instead of having a flood of people through the house, you just have a couple people in at the same time, and then they go out, the next two people come in. And let's be honest, you don't really get a flood of people at the open houses anyways. So I think we should start getting back into open houses, and things might start to normalize a little bit more as we go forward.
Doesn't really change sales though, does it? Open house?
Well, there's about a less than 1% chance that someone's going to buy an open house, but what it does do is exposes the house to as many people, right? I mean, a lot of people say, I don't want to do an open house because of my nosy neighbors. Well, guess what? Those nosy neighbors have family that they'd love living beside them or next to them or friends or, you know, so it's nosy neighbors tell other nosy neighbors, and they tell other people too. So that's why you really do an open house. If you expect to do an open house and someone come in and buy your house from that open house, it's very, very, very slim.
So looking at the September market, which is not terribly different than what we used to call normal, what happens in a normal October-November market? Do things generally pick up a little bit?
Usually our fall, we see a little bit of a slowdown in the summer months, obviously, rightfully so. I mean, we live in a terrible climate, so it's, you know, we have a chance to enjoy, we do. And then the fall, we usually have somewhat of a little bit of a spike and before it goes to that Christmas lull in, you know, early December. But it's who knows in this market, right? I would never have thought Jan, Feb, and March were going to be as robust as they were in the start of 2021. I'm hoping that 2021 finishes strong, just like it did at the start of 2021.
You know what? If it's me and I look back at last January, February, March, I'm not taking that chance this year. I want to get into a place now.
Well, That's it. You never know if that's going to happen again. And do you know how many people who got into the housing market in, let's say, November, December of 2020 and thanked their lucky stars that they didn't have to pay the crazy prices that happened in January, February, March? Yeah. So, I mean, timing's everything, but I don't think we'll see that again. But, you know, I'm hoping to see, we see a bit of a blip and a bit of a spike.
Exactly. It may not be crazy like it was, but it may be a much better market for sellers by then. So you might as well take advantage of low interest rates and lower prices today, no?
Absolutely. I would do it as well. And the funny thing is buyers don't even realize that the market has slowed down. Get back into the market. I mean, there's so many buyers sitting on the sidelines right now that should be back in the game.
Rate's still good, eh, Frank?
Rates are still fantastic. Again, a little bit of a blip a couple of weeks ago, but you're still getting in low twos for a high ratio purchase, and 2.25, 2.29 for 5-year fixed, and variables are still in the 1.5% range. So rates are still fantastic.
Lots of people coming in for pre-approvals.
We're seeing a lot of people get going again and just make sure that they're good just in case they come across the right house. But like Paul said, inventory is too slim right now. There's not a lot of inventory, and that's what's holding some of them back.
And if you have a pre-approval that's older, time to get another one?
Just get it updated. You know, if nothing has changed with your financial position, then probably the pre-approval is still good. It's just about getting a rate guarantee. I mean, a pre-approval is not about locking in a rate for 4 months. And if you can lock it in before, especially if we have another little bit of an increase, yeah, lock it in now. If something happens in the next 4 months, at least you've got a good rate set up.
Birthdays.
Birthdays, I got a few of them. Our good friend, media mogul, Brad Beckler, celebrated his birthday this week. So happy birthday to Brad. And Kim Powell-Steele, Tom Burrow, and Rachel Claremont from our office celebrated their birthday this week as well. And we got a really, really old man celebrating next week. But we'll save that one for till next week.
Paul's having his birthday next week.
I just want to give a shout out to the crew I had dinner with last night, Phil Hahn, Sonny Dalgett, some of my old crew from back in my Keller Williams days. We just had an absolute blast. And thanks to Phil Hahn for actually picking up the bill. That's something I usually do with Frank. So it was nice that, you know, someone picked up the bill for me, Frank, you know.
Phil texted me and said, guess what, Frank? I paid here too. So, yeah.
Well, it's good to see you're not stealing his Visa card to get him to pay. That's been known to happen, eh, Paul? Have a great week, gentlemen. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Please support local businesses and charities, everyone.